Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
The grumpy, cynical cybersecurity guy, Corey Knockreiner.
Pop, pop, Corey's back again.
Get off my lawn, Mark.
In today's episode, we cover a few news updates on ransomware attacks and ad blocker restrictions.
So we haven't heard enough about ransomware.
We have to get our weekly ransomware topic in. Oh, we forgot to crap on Facebook.
Oh, darn. I knew we were missing something. No wonder I'm feeling so grumpy. I would have felt much better if we got that off our chest.
After that, we talk about facial recognition technology, why it matters, and some privacy concerns around that.
I heard the camera broke when it tried to recognize you, Mark.
Ouch. Let's go to the news. So let's start today with a recap of a news article from actually a few years ago. And some updates that we received on a few years ago. Not a few years ago, a few weeks ago. God, time travels.
Just off by a factor of 365.
Oh, it's been a week. So May 7th.
Sorry, I guess not 365 then. What is that? Like 50-something, 52?
Yes, something like that.
Just off by a factor of 52 then.
If you remember, actually, a few weeks ago, we're all kinds of wrong here.
No, it's a factor of 26.
May 7th. May 7th was the day where we found out that Baltimore was hit with a pretty widespread ransomware attack. Took down a large portion of their networks. I think we covered this a few episodes ago on the 443. We've had some recent updates come out of this, though. First off, they're looking at $18.2 million in damages from this ransomware attack against the city, which is...
Not from ransom payment, though, right?
No.
Because they chose not to, which is a good thing.
Yep. This includes the $5 million they've spent already in consulting fees and cleanup costs, but they're expecting it to go up to $18.2 million, which is a pretty substantial amount of money, especially for just the city.
Wonder how much less it would have cost them just to implement good security practices beforehand. Maybe it's, $1 million?
We'll get to that, I think. Last week, though, the New York Times posted a long-form article where they claimed that Eternal Blue, the vulnerability that was used in WannaCry, was also used in this attack as well. And if you haven't listened to any of our podcasts of the two dozens where we've talked about Eternal Blue, it was a hacking tool that was stolen from the NSA, so our own national security agency.
Specifically a zero-day exploit for a server message block, Windows's file sharing SMB.
Yep. And it was stolen back in March, I think, of 2017.
WannaCry was 2016, wasn't
2017,
it?
2017, 2 years ago now. And
it was patched 1 month before
yep.
WannaCry came out,
exactly.
And it was out a few months before it was patched,
yep.
I think.
So either way, this was a NSA hacking tool now that was used in another attack against a U.S. organization or city or whatever you want to
By
label
way,
it as.
Not the first time NotPetya no. used it. There's been tons of samples that have used this. And for the people that don't know, there's like seven other eternal vulnerabilities beyond just this blue one.
Yep. But now the mayor and the city council president for Baltimore are trying to get the attack classified as a disaster so that they can receive federal aid, partially because they're blaming the federal government and the NSA
wow.
for this attack.
Does FEMA now do cyber disasters?
It's very interesting. So we mentioned this is not the first time. It's dozens, if not hundreds of attacks now that have happened because of these zero-day stockpiled attacks that the NSA and other security organizations have had. Is there some blame on the shoulders of the NSA in this case? Should they be financially responsible if U.S. cities get attacked by their own hacking tools? My thoughts are, obviously, so I think we're in different boats here based off other conversations we had where I understand the need for our government to have attacks that they can use to go after terrorists or whatever you
nope.
want to call them, nation states. But there is the genuine concern that they start affecting our own citizens. So with that being the case, should the NSA be held responsible for this and have to help pay for the recovery costs?
Should they have to pay? I think that's a nope in my opinion. But are they partially responsible? Absolutely. I think I disagree with you, Mark, in that I don't think any government agency should have a zero day on a application that every citizen in the world potentially uses. they're doing more damage because they obviously don't even have enough security themselves to keep this exploit to themselves. So if you can't even protect your own zero day, you're obviously too moronic to have them in the first place. Yes, I said it, NSA. You should rather try to help vendors fix it so the adversary can't exploit it against us and our state. That's my opinion. Now, if they want to go get Siemens vulnerabilities, if they want to find attacks in products that military and government uses and aren't necessarily products that every civilian in the world relies on, that might be a different story. You could argue that, hey, it's not a well-used product. The chance of someone else finding the vulnerability are small. We might keep this as a tool to use in our own red team operations.
That's fair. I think the collateral damage from Eternal Blue specifically is in like the billions of dollars now from private organizations.
Either way, the day you can protect, this is the same argument is them having backdoors on encryption keys. Hey, well, technically we can make a three key system and it works perfectly fine. Can you protect the third key? No, you've proven it over and over. The government is not secure. You've lost data over and over. The reason cryptographers and the security community don't want governments to have backdoors to encryption isn't because it's not possible to make multiple key systems. It's because you can't protect these keys. You're opening up more possibilities for bad guys to break in. So whether you're whether you think it's naive to think they shouldn't have some tools, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when it's tools that are consumer public products that everyone has, it's stupid, and they've actually proven that they don't have the responsibility to have these exploits. They should be helping vendors fix them.
So
that will do more to protect their own nation than using it against the adversary.
Fair.
In my opinion.
Eternal Blue was, I just looked it up, patched in March 2017. It's now May 2019. How are people still getting hit by vulnerabilities that have been patched for 2 years? Like Microsoft even released patches for unsupported versions of Windows like XP and Vista and Server 2003 for this vulnerability. How is it that people are still getting hit by this? Do you think it's a...
You know how it's possible. They're lazy people that don't patch. I'm being super cynical today. I'm sorry, audience. But I think we all know, as much as every security expert tells you to patch right away, 90% of organizations don't. Sometimes it's legit reasons in that they have operational technology or old things that rely on old operating systems. So there are business reasons that make it harder to patch. But even those aside, some are just too busy, could be too lazy or apathetic, could be no budget or resource to do it as much as they need. But while it's kind of a cynical outlook, I'm not surprised that a huge percentage of companies don't seem to have a patch for this, including Boeing, by the way.
And let's say, yeah, Boeing was hit, what, last year, 1 year after the fact, too?
Yeah, pretty much a little under a year. I think it was March.
And let's put on our understanding hats and recognize there are some, like in healthcare, for example, we have very specialized software that
a drug pump that you can't really load a new operating system
on. If that's the case, though, you need to take extra steps to make sure that that thing is really locked down, like stick it on its own network.
But there, could it be negligence, apathy, or even ignorance? I mean, how many hospital staff, even the IT guy, do you think realizes that the MRA imaging system that comes as this all-in-one package is actually deep down a Windows NT server?
Do you think that there's maybe they should have to know that before they connect to a network?
Yes.
Requirements? Yeah.
They should.
That's a dumb question.
But I bet
sorry.
You that a lot of folks don't realize that these drug pumps and these MRA machines actually use off-the-shelf embedded operating systems half the time.
And this obviously isn't the last time that we're going to see this. We just saw Microsoft put out patches for that
RDP
vulnerability too. Against Windows XP, Vista, and 7 as well.
By the way, if you heard Bluekeep is, I think, the code name for it. It's like MS-019, whatever.
0109, I think?
0708, I thought.
Whatever. Bluekeep.
But 0708 was the...
Now, actually, do they have a logo yet? Because that's when it's
that's
really...
That's a good question. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
Because if they don't have a logo, it's not a serious
real.
Vulnerability.
It's... Or at least they have a bad marketing team on that research.
So I guess our moral of the story for that is patch your systems or protect them, like restrict access into and out of them, except to whatever is specifically required for them to work.
I've heard you've had discussions about this with people. I think another takeaway to these, it seems ransomware is targeting cities. We saw it with Atlanta. We've seen some local Carolina cities. Yep. There's been one here in Washington State that we actually had a TV interview about. Ransomware authors seem to be targeting cities. And I think one of the complaints from a lot of city IT staff, which usually includes the security staff because most of them don't necessarily have, especially if they're local, have any direct security expertise. It's just the IT guy's responsibility. They don't seem to have the budgets necessary for this. So another takeaway, and this goes for business as much as a city, but if you're worried about this stuff, you need to budget some ability to hire security professionals and to take the time to implement security controls that can help you.
Or else you're going to get stuck with $18.2 million sometime in the future to clean up.
Yep. And in most cases, the security that would have prevented it is exponentially cheaper than that cost.
Yep. So moving on, another news story I wanted to bring up that I saw today while perusing through different articles was, I didn't realize this, Google is actually making changes to the Chrome extension system, which they call Manifest V3, that's going to start restricting how ad blockers actually function. So I guess there's a few different ways that ad blocking extensions can implement their features. The more modern ones like uBlock Origin and Ghostery, like the ones that I use, actually tied directly
into...
By the
way, that was code for the cool ones that all the cool kids should be using.
Exactly.
You're still using ad blocker? You're so yesterday. Be on fleek and use uBlock Origin.
So these ones, they're more efficient and work more reliably because they tie directly in with the web requests API. So the API the browser uses to go load content for web pages. And it allows them to block access to, or block the download and rendering of these web requests for advertisements before they even reach the browser. Now, the changes Google is making is deprecating that low-level access and instead forcing these browser extensions to use a rules-based system where they just have a set of rules of, is this blocked or not? Google's currently restricting that to like 30,000 rules, I think, per extension, which one of the articles I read pointed out that most of these ad blockers already have several times that.
Yeah.
But the reason I wanted to bring this up was we are all pretty used to using ad blockers these days now. At least most tech folk have some sort of ad blocker installed because A, it provides security, and B, it removes a lot of really annoying things you see as you're browsing through the web. But that really runs counter to what Google relies on for earning money. Google is a advertisement
company.
And
the websites, by the way. The websites we're blocking ads typically monetize off those ads, to be fair.
Google even pointed out in one of the recent SEC filings that one of their big risks are ad blockers because they're removing revenue from websites that people are browsing to.
Don't worry, just install CoinHive. CoinHive.
Thankfully, CoinHive is gone.
Well, not the JavaScript.
Gosh, yeah.
I can easily put it on my site.
So, long story short with this, ad blockers are going to start being a little less efficient in Google Chrome, with one caveat being if you are a Google Chrome Enterprise customer, your browser will still have access to those low-level APIs. So I thought it was an interesting topic. Like,
it'd be interesting to see if Apple and Mozilla and Microsoft follow suit or not.
And so that is a good point. Right now, Firefox doesn't have plans on doing that. And I think that's largely because they don't really rely on advertisement revenue.
Nope.
Microsoft
probably does some, but not in the same sense of, I guess they have Bing, but not in the same sense of Google.
I mean, it's not like anyone uses
either
Bing,
way, so. I mean, right now, Chrome is probably winning the browser war.
Chromium, like the framework that Chrome's built on, is something like 80% of the browser share right now.
But this could change it for technical users. I would have to say that, well, one of my comments is actually, I honestly don't care about ads. I don't like to see them, and it's nice that they aren't bothering me right now. But as long as you don't take away my NoScript, or should I say ScriptSafe, if they mess with my ability to block active scripting or JavaScript on a domain level, you know, granularity, that would piss me off, because to me that's more the security. Ads are not the problem, it's the script that's sometimes found on these ad pages, and as long as no script or JavaScript work, or I'm sorry, script safe specifically for Chrome, then I personally don't care.
Well, it'll be interesting to follow this and see if the outcry.
I would love to see if everyone switches to Firefox and if suddenly Chrome reneges on this because they want to win the browser war again.
We'll see. Aside from the whole expired certificate deleting all of my extensions in Firefox, I've been happy with it recently. And before we move on, I had one more thing I wanted to bring up.
You sound like Steve Jobs at Apple conference.
One more. This one bugged me. So a few days ago, a laptop filled with 8 pieces of malware, I think, sold for $1.3 million as a piece of art.
I know. It's art, Mark.
A $200 laptop.
You didn't recognize the beauty?
Intentionally infected with malware.
I thought it was $1.3
million. That is a ton of money for something that I could have. I don't know.
I'm just mad that you didn't come up with the idea.
Yes, I am. And I also just don't understand art. Like, what are you going to do with this laptop? Stick it on, like, a podium and say, hey, look, WannaCry's on it. Anyways, I don't understand it. I don't get art. Someone please tweet at me why this is actually art. Let's move on.
They were the most dangerous ones, Mark. The most dangerous ones. And it had a ransomware pop-up on it.
It's so dumb.
Damn, give me $100 and I'll do that to your laptop for you, no problem.
Exactly.
We have a subscription to VirusTotal. We can recreate this for anyone that wants it. Now, just tweet at us at the 443 podcast.
Can they copyright it because it's art? Can they prevent me from installing those specific strains of malware?
They don't own them in the first place. They can't copyright what they don't own. In fact, it'd be awesome if the 6 malware authors surface and sue them all for their cut of the creation in this malware-infected
piece.
Careful,
you're giving North Korea another money-making idea.
Except maybe it's all just an elaborate FBI scheme. This whole story is fake, and they're just trying to kind of, what's it called, honeypot the authors to come get their art earnings.
That's an interesting take.
There's Corey's tinfoil hat sidebar of the day.
You know what? If it comes out and you're proven correct in that, I will eat your tinfoil hat. So our main section today comes from a news article from just this week, where a German-based Chinese user on the Chinese social media network site, Weibo?
Too many things.
Weibo.
German, Chinese,
German,
Weibo.
So a Chinese user in Germany on Weibo claimed to have used facial recognition to identify the real identities of over 100,000 adult content actresses, is what I'll call them.
Adult content is much different than an adult contractor, so I'm glad you verified that.
Yes. So they originally stated their intention was to, quote, to have the right to know both sides of the marriage, but they received, understandably, quite a bit of backlash for this, and they later stated that their real reasoning was to allow women to check if they are on a pornography website and have the content taken down with copyright strikes.
Hmm. So I could see that being useful to
could be.
The adult content people that have their stuff stolen.
But really, behind the story is there's been a lot of advancements in machine learning and AI recently, especially in the facial recognition space and image recognition space. And even on the hobbyist levels, like this guy, who's just some programmer in Germany that decided to do this. But there are some pretty big security and privacy concerns that comes with this sort of technology. So I wanted to have a bit of a chat with you and get your thoughts on what you think some of the issues with facial recognition are, or if you think it's all just blown out of proportion and nothing really
it's
matters.
It's all fine. I want my picture to be everywhere. I want everyone to know where I am. Perfectly fine, Mark. There's no problem with that.
All right. So really, I thought that this story was proof that like facial recognition technology can be abused. This is a proof of that particular issue with it.
I don't know why it took this story to know it's already been happening right. Big time.
But really, whether or not like this programmer's original intentions are. It's really, this tool could be used to abuse, like, cyber stalking and harassment of adult actresses.
And, or anybody.
Or really anyone.
Some girl has a stalker in Move State, now someone can find you online.
Yeah, and it's really easy to create tools like this.
But by the way, this exists. I don't know if you found the reverse image search that has existed forever, but it's quite easy nowadays to use reverse image searches to find images of faces. While it's not facial recognition, it makes me think of the whole deepfake situation, which is also being helped by machine learning, where not only is there plenty of online pictures of everybody you know in social media, but now we can use all that content not only to find out more about you and where you are, but to recreate fake content with you. Maybe you're not an adult content actress, you're a normal person, but someone can use deepfakes to take all your pictures and make you an adult content actress.
But so facial recognition, it does have benefits. There's reasons that, like, law enforcement organizations want to use it. Like, imagine you're a cop and you've got your facial recognition scanner on your shirt or whatever, and you're walking through the streets on patrol. And
but should we all give up our privacy for that? I mean,
exactly.
Should they have the face of people that do they have your fingerprints, Mark? Would you want the police to have your fingerprints if you haven't committed a crime?
Probably not, no.
So why should they have our face?
That's a good point. But what if our face is already out there? Like, they already have access to it because of social media. So if they're using this database to catch criminals, is that a good use?
Again, it's all context, right?
And I think both of us
are... I don't mind them catching a criminal, but I also don't easily a criminal... an assassin could use this to find somebody that they're looking for.
And organizations like the EFF and ACLU have pointed out that, like, image recognition is not perfect, and that's one of the big issues with it. Like, it especially has problems with U.S. minorities and correctly identifying
them. Yeah, it's
still
racist.
Exactly.
So, it doesn't understand contrast very well.
Exactly. So because of that, there's genuine concerns where some people might be more negatively affected with this technology than other classes of citizens, right?
Although in this case, I actually think Caucasian people have the most to worry right now. It seems to be the best with us.
That's a good point, yes.
As far as valid recognition.
Well, so...
my Kinex camera actually recognizes me, whereas I hear some people aren't recognized by their Xbox because its first algorithm was racist.
You mentioned that. So, like, criminals, like Caucasian criminals have a bigger concern than this, but what about innocent minorities? Like, what if they are falsely...
They can't use it as proof that they weren't there or something.
Yeah. So there are concerns with this technology. Like, we saw just this week, San Francisco is banning all of their police and government agencies from using facial recognition technology. And we actually chatted about this earlier in one of our meetings, where it's not just because of the privacy concerns about cops having access to these databases, but because of the security issues of having these databases of biometric information in the first place. Like, all of these facial recognition technologies are built around having a ton of data about a person, which if an attacker is able to get a hold of that, maybe they can use that with, like, deep fakes to then go create fictitious, malicious videos.
Anyways, facial recognition is just technology. It has benefits and it has negative side effects. It's how humanity uses it. The thing is, I don't have much hope or I'm rather cynical as if it hasn't become obvious. And I think a lot of governments and a lot of bad actors will use it in negative ways.
So
on the flip side, I like that I can just look at my phone for it to open now. So go facial recognition for unlocking my phone.
Do you think that we should be pushing to have governments or ban governments from using facial recognition entirely?
Do I think we have to control the data. I mean, I use my phone as an example. One of the reasons I trust my particular phone, which I guess I shouldn't buzz market the vendor, but is
Apple iPhone X by now.
Well, there you go. He buzz marketed for me. And thank you for outing me. Now the attacker trying to enumerate me knows exactly what to target. Thanks, Mark.
Got you.
I didn't have to break my own OPSEC. Mark did it for me.
That's what friends are for.
Anyways, it it doesn't share your facial data with Apple or anybody. It just stores the biometric token locally in a trusted secure enclave. So there's lots of ways to use facial recognition for positive things without actually exposing the data. To me, it's about the having control of your own private personal data. My face is my property. If I do release pictures to the public, I guess that's my own fault. But if I want to control what someone has and I haven't broken a law, there's no reason government should have access to my face until I've done something that, like, break the law.
So
that they have some sort of justified
sounds
cause.
Like you're in the don't ban it outright, but regulate it with laws that require, like, specific search warrants and
subpoenas
in order to get it.
The same thing we've done for all kinds of data. We've done it with fingerprints. I believe same for even our DNA, although it's a little easier to accidentally leave DNA where people can find it.
And I think I'm
that'd be our next, by the way, thing, because soon DNA will be part of our biometrics for security too, cybersecurity.
Everyone's going to wear gloves and hairnets everywhere.
Have you watched Gattaca yet? You still need to watch that.
Then
you'll start to recognize the security implications of DNA biometric data.
Our producer agrees that I should watch Gattaca, so it'll be on the list.
It's facial recognition to the next level.
That sounds terrifying. Is there a concern that if we allow facial recognition, we're going to turn into like Minority Report, where we can go after people that might not necessarily have committed crimes yet?
Could Black Mirror episodes come true? Absolutely. That's why they scare the heck out of us. Is that the right way to say it?
Well done.
Because they are so close to reality already.
And it's like China, for example, is using facial recognition. Oh man, neither of us can talk today. Facial recognition technology.
We both have the best words.
The strongest words.
You're now a stable genius. Bigly,
God.
Man. You're Bigly.
I quit.
Or Big League. Big Lee or Big League.
Big
I never
league.
Could understand.
Give me some hamburgers.
Hamburgers.
What was I saying? Yes, the Chinese social credit system is using facial recognition technology, is catching people doing things that are bad social credit and then denying them from going on like train or airplane trips. And
that sounds
really
great.
Is.
That's just what I'd love. Give a communist organization my biometrics. Great idea.
It is really
Let's
out
do
of
that
a,
here.
It is out of a Black Mirror. The Orville had an episode about this I just watched where your social credit
What's
matters what you can do. You've never seen the
I
Orville?
I thought you misspelled Orwell. Like,
Orville.
I was thinking
You've
this
not
is all
seen
Orwellian, but I don't know what Orville is.
Seth MacFarlane cosplaying Star Trek?
Oh, it's the fake Star Trek.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, we need to do a security article series. The 7 cybersecurity tips I learned from Orville. You just gave me a work excuse to watch it. Thank
there you
Mark.
Go. Well done. I expect that within the next week.
Voxus will get it. To be my new GeekWire series.
So, God. Yes, exactly. Next up on GeekWire, 5 things you can learn from the Orville. So, what are our takeaways from this? Like, how do you, I guess, if you are concerned about privacy, how do you protect yourself from facial recognition software?
There's buy the special glasses.
There are glasses that you see people wearing them at DEF CON all the time. That like
that's
blast
more for
out
the
IR.
Machine learning algorithms specifically. Like, I guess there's also some physical glasses that might be able to mess with the actual camera lenses. But yep. The ones I've seen too are trying to mess up some of the indicators that a machine learning algorithm is looking for when it's trying to.
So if you don't want to wear glasses, what can you do? Just not post your pictures online ever?
Look, let's be honest. The cat's out of the bag. Facial recognition's here to stay. It's just about us trying to get regulations to get our governments to use it in safe and appropriate ways.
So I unfortunately
think it's a society problem. It's who you vote for, the congressmen you believe in, the topics you take up to take to your government, whether it's local or federal. Because I don't think we have any control of facial recognition not being a thing anymore. We just have some control, at least in our democratic country, to try to get the way they use it.
So this is one of those things where if it matters to you, you need to contact your representative to let them know.
Doesn't necessarily immediately have to be the congressman, but local government, etc.
Or buy some of those sweet glasses that block cameras.
EFF is a good organization, by the way. If you are a privacy buff, you want to donate, you want to help, they have the pull to actually get to some of the government organizations. So if you care about privacy, you've heard me and Mark buzz market EFF all the time, and that's something I'm happy to buzz market.
Yep, them and the Apple iPhone X available now.
Aren't I like a version behind? We're
probably
like selling their old stock for them.
Siri,
there, that's Siri. She was listening. She's like, Corey, you have a free iPhone XS coming for your advertisement. Thank you, Siri.
All right, let's
get out
of here.
By the way, she just dictated everything.
This is about you, Corey, not me.
Okay, Siri.
Let's get out of here before we have any more accidental product placements. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or
ask Mark
suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey's at @SecAdept.
It says no soliciting right on the door.
And the both of us are at #the443podcast. Yeah, that's the one. Thanks
I
again
quit.
For Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Maybe.